Okay, our next presenter is Dr. James Gordino, and his presentation is entitled Increases in Human Papillomavirus Vaccine Coverage Among Adolescent Girls in the Metropolitan Oregon. And it gives me great honor to introduce the chairperson of the epidemiology section, who's doing such a wonderful job in keeping us all in order. Jim.
Thank you, Sonia. I paid her to say that. Well, thank you all for hanging in today. This is the last, I guess, scientific session. We're about ready to go home. What I'm going to be talking about is increases in human papillomavirus coverage among adolescent girls in metropolitan Oregon, a report from CDC's Sentinel Immunization Information System, or Registry, or IIS, surveillance site. Other than financial support from CDC, we have no other relationships to report. Now, it's been about 10, 15 years since we've been building these population-based IIS, and IIS data have become a primary source for clinics, schools, and other patient-level immunization records from multiple sources. So it's a gathering of reports from multiple clinics, et cetera. The IIS data now, because it's becoming so complete, are becoming increasingly useful for immunization coverage, surveillance, and evaluation and research. What we're going to look at primarily is our effort to monitor early uptake of HPV or human papillomavirus vaccine among Oregon Sentinel adolescent girls. And we're going to secondarily compare those vaccine uptake rates with several other new vaccines among the same population. So we're going to look at the new Tdap or tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis vaccine, and the meningococcal conjugate vaccine, MCV4. Now, even as vaccine-preventable disease incidence is declining, control of those diseases and prevention still remains a challenge, especially for certain diseases. In Oregon, we've had various, I think, somewhere around 19 outbreaks since 2003 of pertussis. Adolescents and adults are notably at risk, as they are elsewhere, and in part because of waning immunity. Now, in the last years, with the availability of vaccines from manufacturers, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices has recommended several new adolescent vaccines. As a reminder, here are the recommendations in summary for the HPV vaccination, and the target group is really the 11 to 12-year-old girls. There are three doses, from 0 to 2 months, and then 6 months later to be complete. Vaccination could start earlier, and there's catch-up vaccination recommendations for older girls and young women. For MCV, you'll notice that we're looking at the same target group, the 11 to 12-year-olds, and other unvaccinated children, et cetera. The recommendations are a little bit more complicated. And then recently in June of last year, the ACIP recommended vaccination for all children from 11 to 18. For Tdap, the tetanus and pertussis, et cetera, vaccine, same target group. And then there's some catch-up for older teens as well. So, by law, the Federal Vaccine for Children's Program has incorporated all these ACIP-recommended vaccinations for reimbursement by the VFC program. Other states, we get other funding by CDC, the 317 vaccine, and as we can, we include those vaccinations for children and adolescents that don't qualify for VFC. So that's a choice of the states. In Oregon, of course, we cover all VFC, that's ACIP recommended vaccines. But we had a two-tier system up until about earlier, just a couple months ago, and did not cover MCV or the meningococcal polysaccharide vaccine, and that's until August. About the registry, huge registry, lots of data, multiple sources. You can see here private clinics, public clinics, Medicaid, major health plans, IPAs, and we have a data exchange with Washington State's registry called Child Profile. Again, lots of data. 8 million individuals almost are captured. Their records are captured in our system. 41 million shots. We encourage timeliness. Now, a little background about the Sentinel project. From 2004 to 2007, Oregon hosted a CDC-funded Sentinel IIS surveillance project. That's hard to say sometimes. Using alert data, that's the name of our system, from a growing 12 zip code area in the greater Portland area to monitor child immunization coverage. Somewhere around October of 06, we started to do routine monitoring of adolescent vaccination coverage in the same population. And then beginning this year, with a new cycle of grants, we expanded that area to a 42 zip code area. So in case you're not familiar with Oregon, here's a map of Oregon. And in the northwest part of the state is Portland, the area that I'm talking about. You can see the Columbia River, by the way, just north of the state there. Doesn't show well. Okay. Well, anyway, there is a blue shaded area where it says Washington County. That's the location of the 12 zip code area. And then if you include the yellow shaded area, that whole area includes the 42 zip code area. So there, Washington County is mostly the 12 zip code area, or I should say it the other way around. And then combined, you have the 42 zip code area. Just a blurb about who these populations are. The Sentinel area is located in Multnomah and Washington counties, as I said. That includes Portland, the most populated areas in Portland and Washington County. Washington County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state. There's high-tech industry. It's a little bit more affordable than other parts of Portland. Poverty rates differ, as you can see, between the two counties. Less poverty in Washington than in Multnomah County, almost 26% poverty among children less than 19. Race and ethnicity, we don't have a lot of diversity in terms of our racial and ethnic diversity, but you can see there are differences. There are a greater percentage of Hispanic children in Washington County, about 20%. Versus 15% in Multnomah County, and there are a greater percentage of African American children in Multnomah County than there are in Washington County, and a few points greater in terms of multi-race children as captured by the census. Now, the 42 zip code area captures about a third of the population of children and adolescents in our state. So it includes a big chunk of the children. Now, as I was saying, starting in October of 06, we extracted vaccination rates from rolling cohorts of adolescents ages 11 to 18 with their most recent addresses in the Sentinel area. And we used a two-shot or more criteria to select out children to be included in the denominator, if you will, for rates. That was changed with a new negotiation between the Sentinel sites, and there was a lot of debate about it. So now we're tracking kids with any kind of record in the system, as long as they had an address in the Sentinel area at the time we were looking at the quarter we're looking. Those are called. So I'll be using the term two-shot group, a two-shot denominator, and the zero shot, but that includes zero in one shot as well as the other kids. So the rolling cohorts of teenagers for the 12 zip code area is somewhere around 42 to almost 47,000, 46,000 kids in all. About 21 to 24,000 girls in the 12 zip code area. So it's a big chunk. It's a lot of data. And in the 42 zip code area, it's about twice as much, twice as many teenagers, both total and girls. We used our standard procedures to pull the data and deduplicate. We also went out and made sure we looked for the proper vaccine antigen codes so that we're looking at the correct antigens when we're doing our analysis. Now, I have to explain something. The quarters that were used in the previous, the 04 to 07 group, were actually not calendar year quarters. They were shifted earlier, about a month and a half earlier. So, example, the end of the quarter 4 for 07 actually ended in mid-November. Again, with changes in methodology, we actually earlier this year we actually went to real quarters, so January to March. So there's a little bit of difference in timing, but they are all 3 month blocks. And then we looked at up to date rates, and we pulled the data about a month and a half to 2 months later than the end of the quarter, so that we would have a complete reporting, but we use assessment dates that are at the end of the quarter. So, having said all that, here are, and I'm going to use the same color patterns, here are rates for HPV-1 or more vaccinations for girls 11 to 18 in the 12 zip code area, because we didn't have data, we didn't track data previously for the larger group. And you can see that the cooler colors are the earlier quarters, and the more recent quarters are the brighter colors, including the last quarter, about mid-year this year, in red. So we're going to look at that. You can see that for the 10 to 12 year olds, the HPV vaccination rates are somewhere around 17% ended up. You can see this dramatic increase over here. There was about a thousandfold increase in rates between quarter, I think January of 07 to July of 07. Big change, really rapid change. The group that has the highest rate are the 16 to 18 year olds, and that's getting close to 35%. And overall, over here, this is the combined group, and you're going to see this again. The rate is somewhere around 27%. So for two or more shots, remember it's a three-dose dosing, the rates obviously are going to go down because we haven't had enough time to get these girls in, and there might be some other issues too. But the rates for two or more for 11 to 12-year-olds is about 10%. For the 16 to 18-year-olds who had the highest rate before, it's over 20%, maybe 22%. And then combined for the whole age group, we're talking about 17%. Now, for completion, those with three or more, the rates are much lower. So less than 5% for the 11 to 12-year-olds. About over 10% for the 16 to 18 year olds, and in the middle you can see that there are differences for the slightly younger kids. And then the combined 11 to 18 year olds, the rate is about 8%. So that's completion. For MCV4, which I didn't point out, but you might remember that actually came out first before HPV and Tdap. The rates are actually lower, and I'll show you a slide that makes that a little clearer. But for 11 to 12-year-olds, we're now about 17%. The highest group, instead of being the 16 to 18, with the highest group of the group with the highest rates, over 25%, are the 13 to 15 year olds, and this is all kids now. Before we were talking about just girls. And for the 11 to 18 year olds, we're talking about less than 25%. For Tdap, Tdap actually came out in about the middle. The rates are the highest, so for the 11 to 12 year olds, our target group, their rates are running close to 27%, maybe. The 13 to 15 year olds seem to have the highest rates, and they're over 35%. And then combined total 11 to 18 were less than 30%. Now, taking that 11 to 18 bar that you saw on the right hand side of each of those graphs and then comparing them, you can see that it's clear that Tdap did the best. We're doing the best in terms of coverage for Tdap, a little less than 30% for that population. And then HPV is really close for girls. It's literally almost exact. And then MCV is lagging behind, less than 25%. It's a little bit complicated, but now, so what about the larger population? And What I have here is it's complicated because I have the MCV4 rates for the first two quarters, which is where we're doing Sentinel. Actually, that's a typo. It should actually be 2008. So MCV4, Tdap, and HPV, and then depending on the denominator that was used. So we've been using the two-shot denominator, and that's what these bars are here on the right-hand side of each group, and then if we used a zero shot or included all kids that were in the registry in that area at that time, the rates would go down about 5% or so if you look across comparing the different groups, especially the red bars. The other thing is, how do these rates compare to the 12 zip code area, the rates that I was showing you earlier? That's what these little arrows are, and you can see HPV is probably for the second quarter, which is what this is, they're comparable. They're essentially comparable. For Tdap, there's a little bit of lag in the larger area, and for MCV, there's a little bit of a lag for the larger area. So let me make a few comments here. Some of the limitations include all child and adolescent residents may not be captured. That's one of the arguments. So there's unvaccinated, we certainly know about them. Highly mobile kids, kids vaccinated by non-reporting clinics, and not all providers participate. But we've been building this system a long time. And many providers in the Sentinel area alone, were over like 95% of the providers and clinics that we know about are reporting in our Sentinel area. That's one of the criteria to be a Sentinel area. Now, this is multi-source data. So if we don't get all the shots from one source, let's say there's a clinic that's not reporting, we might pick it up from the billing for the health plan or others. We backfill a lot of immunization records through other sources. This is rapid, sometimes real-time surveillance in a local population. Much larger populations are included than, say, in the National Immunization Survey. I know there's a youth portion of the National Immunization Survey. That comes out once a year. So for us, it's more useful. Now, vaccine deduplication may still be a problem. But if you think about it like this, we're using the same methods across time. So if there is some issue around vaccine deduplication, nothing would have changed. So the relative rate differences between the periods probably still are consistent. Thank you. One last slide here, and I'll make some comments and we can talk a little bit about it. These are large increases in HPV and Tdap coverage that we noticed, actually surprising to us, and especially between quarter one of 07 and quarter three of July of 07 in July, January to July. I remember I said it was like a thousandfold increase in HPV. But HPV completion continues to lag. Now, while MCV has been available and recommended longer, our rates, and I think this is consistent from what I've seen in other reports, are still lagging behind some of the more newer vaccines, Tdap and HPV. So we probably need a little bit more information about the impacts of there were supply limits for MCV earlier on. There were case reports of Guillain-Barré syndrome that happened a few years ago. Haven't seen any recently. And the lack of, remember I was telling you about the lack of 317 coverage for teenagers that weren't VFC eligible. And what about parent and adolescent acceptance for MCV versus HPV? We don't know anything about that. So despite our early increases, with the lack of specific with a lack of specific adolescent immunization visits, for that matter, that there's not, there are recommendations, but there are not, these are new recommendations for adolescents to get to the doctor. We don't know how quickly these rates are going to continue to increase and what the barriers are going to appear to be. So we need to continually monitor all these vaccines, including looking for HPV completion. To take a look at the impact of the new coverage now for MCV4, and we have new school requirements kicking in for Tdap later on this year, I understand, so we want to understand if that's going to help out or not. So as other states, we have a ways to go in Oregon to achieve the high coverage that we're trying to achieve. So we're starting out in small steps, and I'll stop there. Any questions?
I just want to comment. I'm from New York and we have a Tdap requirement. And I've had it for the third school. And of course, our Tdap rates have moved aside, but New York City enforces the mandate. So kids line up the day before school starts around the block.
So when you say they enforce the mandate, we have a certain process. What do you guys do? So you can't even enroll, or you can't show up. All right.
So consequently, you know, we're overwhelmed. What's really interesting is we just began this last quarter, the second quarter of the year. Third quarter of the year. With fourth grade monastic.
Who's doing that advertisement, by the way? Who is doing that advertisement?
The
drug companies, okay.
And then, of course, there's the Gardasil advertisement for the last year and a half. So they both promoted by vaccine companies, and, you know, anyone watching television is aware of it. But we have very poor acceptance of HPV in the 11 to, I'd say, up to about 16-year-olds. And when we introduced it, it's free for 19 to 26-year-olds. People taking the HPV are the kids that are able to consent to themselves.
Yeah, I thank you very much for that. It's nice to share information between areas. A baseline for Oregon, was it last year or the year before, I presented a paper looking at exemption rates for child immunization requirements. We have pockets of areas that have high exemption rates from school requirements. And in the survey that we did of parents who were exempting and not exempting, parents were clear to us. There were some group of parents that were absolutely not convinced that there was any benefit. And then there was a middle group that would, with more information, respectfully given, that they can use to talk to their providers, probably would, but we haven't tested that out. So the baseline for us is that we have groups, especially in the Portland area. There are a couple pockets, actually, near the State Health Department. There's a 2 miles away, there's a group that we've mapped with high exemption rates. The other thing is the providers are, anecdotally again, are not convinced that MCV, this particular vaccine, is going to cover, make an impact. The meningococcal disease is not much that happens, is not one of the strains, it does not include one of the strains that is in the quadrivalent vaccine. So, yeah, and we've kind of, we've been promoting it, but we haven't been pushing it to those providers. So I think that's one of the issues. And what else can I say? HPV has been highly marketed. I think the homogeneous population in Washington County in particular, it's a little bit more, it's a little less poor, more better access to insurance and that type of thing. There may be a different group. People, this is what I was going to say. We haven't had a chance to really study this because of FERPA regulations. That's the Federal Education Privacy issue. But we think that parents are being very selective about what they're choosing to vaccinate for their young kids and probably for their adolescents, too.
Do you have philosophical
exemption? Yes, that's what I was talking about. It's not called a philosophical exemption. We call it a religious exemption. Simply because we're afraid to bring up the philosophical. But if you look at the law, and I think it's commonly known to the anti-vaccine groups, it's, you know, if you believe that there's blue cheese on the moon and that somehow tells you that, you know, you don't need to be vaccinated, that would be respected as a religious exemption.
In New York, you have no philosophical exemption, and you have to have a letter from your pastor for a religious exemption. So there's only medical.
I'm actually surprised, yeah. Sure, I'm actually surprised that you're still able to get away with that, because there are groups that are really fighting. I know Arkansas really tried to tighten up on their school law and ended up being told by their Supreme Court that they couldn't do it. So you probably had the law for a while. Any others?
I think we're going to hold the questions
okay. Now
so we can have our last presentation. And then I think we'll have 10 minutes left at the end for questions now. Okay, our next presentation